What's up, guys? Welcome back. Today, I have a very exciting guest. They don't make costumes, but don't worry, they have spent years cosplaying as a functional entrepreneur. You may have seen their Minecraft videos on YouTube or have read the Soul Fraud series that I lost my sentence. I'm so sorry. Let me do that again.
That was a devastating burn.
You may have seen his Minecraft videos on YouTube or recognize him as the author of the popular fiction series Soul Fraud Sigils, also known as Andrew Gibbler.
Hello. Hi.
Welcome.
Cool. We're starting out with haymakers. All right. Got it. Noted. I asked Danielle before the podcast what the vibe of the podcast was, and she was like, whatever you want. I see now. No, it's fine. Cool. No. Locked in. Ready.
Good. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I appreciate you traveling as far as you did.
Oh, should we talk about that?
Yeah,
let's tell that story.
Let's do it.
So when Danielle was moving to LA, she was polling a bunch of people she knew in LA about where she should live.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the west side of LA near Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And I was suggesting a place in the air. There's a lot of cool restaurants, great vibe, cool people. It's a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And she eventually was like, I'm going to move actually to the opposite side of LA.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, love you. We'll never see you.
I actually was like, oh, Andrew wants me to live on the west side. I'm going to go as far away.
Mission accomplished, honestly. I think I've seen you 10 times since you've moved here.
That is more than 10. Really? That might be true. 10 might be true. At least 11.
Okay, fine. If we're arguing over the difference between 10 and 11 when you've lived here for several years, I rest my case.
That's fair.
And tonight, I had to come to you, and it only took 90 minutes to get here.
I will say that is insane. It's pretty crazy. And I have been making fun of you for thinking everything is far, because you do think like 15 minutes is far, but 90 minutes is pretty intense. So I appreciate your efforts today. Thank you for being here. It's a sign of true friendship, I'll say.
True. I suffered. I was like, oh, what time do I need to leave? And it was like, oh, now. Oh, okay. I guess I will put pants on.
Well, welcome. I'm excited to talk to you. You do a lot of things. I have a lot of notes here.
Oh,
you
no.
do YouTube. You're an author. You co-founded a board game company. You invest in businesses.
I have done that. That's
as
an interesting.
Well.
That's an interesting note.
You just have a lot of things going on. I want to make sure I cover it all. Is there anything I'm missing?
I don't think so.
No.
Why do you look really pleased?
I'm not really pleased. I'm not. I swear.
I think that's everything interesting. We'll see.
Great. If somebody has never seen you online before, how would you describe your online presence to them?
Loud.
Loud.
It's pretty loud.
Interesting.
I'm pretty famous for yelling a lot.
Really?
Yeah. Usually my voice goes up like a little bit when the camera turns on. You gotta get it, you know, gotta get that YouTuber exuberance.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Will you give us your best thumbnail faces?
Oh, man. I mean, I can. You know, you gotta do one of these, right? This is the...
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the one I see a lot.
And you know what? It works every time. Mm-hmm. So you can complain about it, but the algorithm doesn't lie.
Right. Well, tell us about how you got started in YouTube, because everyone started in a cute little corporate job, I imagine.
I did.
And there was a transition there to full-time gaming YouTuber.
Yeah. Oh, man. YouTube started to get popular while I was in college, like as a website. Well, that's not true. It was popular, but YouTube started to go from like funny internet meme website to like where people were going to find cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had an interest in film and writing. But before that, there was not a lot of great avenues to like make cool stuff and show it to people. The DSLR camera was like the big change of like, you didn't have to spend thousands of dollars on film to make something. And then there was a website where you could just show it and people would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of revolutionary. And so I started a film production company in college with some friends. We did a feature film. It's pretty bad. and then we started making like shorts, like old school action comedy shorts, like Freddie W, Corduroy Digital style. And we made one that went like pretty super viral for the time. As I recall, they used to be able to see this. You can't really see it anymore, but there was a website that would show how many subscribers people were gaining. And we were the number two most subscribed to channel on YouTube per hour. Right behind Jenna Marbles.
No way.
Yeah, it was like Jenna Marbles, then us, right? We went from like 0 to 10,000 in a week, which like back then was crazy, right? Mm-hmm. The biggest channels were like a million or two. I don't think anybody was ever like three. And that was like, while that video was blowing up, we got an email from YouTube that was like, hey, this video is doing really cool. We're sort of like piloting, running ads on videos and paying people. Can we put this video in the program? This is like before the partner program, before everything. Mm-hmm. We had to fill out like 10 pages of legal, like this is every single asset we use. Like there's no copy. Like it was like nothing like it is today, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was super complicated. It took like a week of handwritten review. Right. We're like, their team like went back and forth with us. Like it was a whole process. But then at the end, they were like, cool, we're now running ads on it and you'll get paid for it. Wow. Of course, by then the video had already like done its thing and was done. Mm-hmm. But we got paid like $200. And what was really funny was the group of guys I was recording with had sort of like very different reactions to this. Okay. Some of them were very demoralized. They were like, we had a website breaking internet, like, you know, there were news articles written about it, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we made $200. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they paid me $200 to be an idiot. I will do that again. Mm-hmm. And so eventually some of the other guys like went and did other things. They were, you know, some of them like just stopped kind of pursuing that. And I was like, no. I need that again. And so that's when I started seeing that like a lot of people were getting into gaming. I'd always been a big gamer. And I thought that that was something easier for me to do as like a one-man show rather than like full-blown film productions. And so I started recording gaming content and working in game design. And I was working a corporate job. And then kind of through that, I started meeting some bigger YouTubers who started giving me like collaborations, teaching me stuff, showing me how the ropes, like how to actually do it. And then it sort of segued into a full-time gig like 8 years ago or something Something like that, yeah.
And it was gaming from the beginning?
Well, for that port, yeah. Like I've only ever done like gaming content creation full-time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What games were you playing in the beginning?
Oh, Minecraft from the beginning.
Oh, really?
Well, so some of the lore of why Minecraft is as popular as it is as this whole thing was happening where you had like, can we run ads on like videos made by other people? There was a huge concern over copyright for video games because people were like, well, technically it's like a visual asset made by someone, like they own the copyright.
Yeah.
And
similar to cosplay.
Yeah. I imagine you probably have some like similar things you run into.
Yeah.
But like Google as a whole was hesitant to monetize gaming. Like nobody was sure if you should do it. You had to argue for every video. Like you still had to like reach out to them. And so Minecraft was still indie back then, right? Notch was running it. And he literally said they wrote into the game's terms of service that making YouTube videos was totally fine.
Nice.
Which like was right as everyone was like, this Minecraft game's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you can do whatever, you can make money off of my game. And nobody had ever said that before.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, all the YouTubers were doing Minecraft because it was the only game in the world you could play and make a living off of. Mm-hmm. And then Minecraft did what it did and went meteoric. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the gaming world followed that. Mm-hmm. But it was Minecraft that really was the like door opener for that entire thing in like copyright law.
Gotcha.
Which is why it still rules to this day.
Yeah. That's crazy. I've never played Minecraft.
What?
Before, ever. Not once. So I know that it's sandbox. I know that it could be anything. And I know there's like games inside of the game. But I don't know anything about Minecraft, which...
That's crazy.
I know.
Have you ever built a Lego set?
Yeah.
Okay. It's
like that.
Yeah. But like, man, they're like... equal experience, like foundational experiences now, I think.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to make you play Minecraft.
I mean, I would like to try at some point.
That's crazy.
I know.
I thought they got everyone by now.
I know. A lot of people play it now as like part of them growing up, but I just never did.
Every 6-year-old will play Minecraft.
Right.
From now on.
Mm-hmm. Forever.
Yeah.
And Roblox.
No.
No?
Roblox won't last as long as Minecraft. That's my hot take.
Oh, interesting. How
That's
come?
My hot take.
Do you want to unpack that?
It's that Roblox doesn't have like a core identity. Mm. Minecraft is its own game that is this like beautiful, charming, fun thing. Mm-hmm. Roblox is a platform, but there is no just like, do you want to play Roblox? Doesn't actually mean any one thing. Mm. It's a like, there's a billion games inside of Roblox, which like it will continue, but it will never be like there is sort of a unifying Minecraft experience that okay. then you can go and do other things and turn it into whatever you want. But like if somebody's sure. like, you've never played Minecraft, we're talking about a specific mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm. So then for someone who's never played Minecraft like myself, what videos were you putting out in the beginning and how do they differ for the videos you're putting out today?
In the beginning, one of the things that was really interesting about how Minecraft worked in the beginning is like they didn't really document very much of it. There was like a wiki, but in game it like did not tell you how to do anything. And so it was very much like you figuring out how the game worked and like following your like imagination and experimenting. And it was really charming in that way because games had never really been like that with to such depth before. Like sandboxes had been smaller, right? This was like one of the first truly infinite sandboxes. And so I was making videos of just me like playing, exploring, figuring, trying stuff out. And that was like, it was all sort of built around, you know, people were like all playing on servers and there was a lot of like comedy and there was like the beginning of like mods and stuff like that. Nothing like what it is now where there's like whole industry set up around it, but it was very just like, we're all being pulled into this game and learning about what it is. The very first Minecraft video I ever saw, I was like at my tech job, a coworker sent it to me and this like British man, I actually recently looked this up. This video is like 15 years old. This like British man is doing like a little tutorial in like an ancient version of Minecraft. And he's like, I built this house and I'm gonna teach you guys how to make a fireplace. And he makes his little fireplace and he goes to like click it with his little fire, like the flint and steel to like make a fire. And he misses. He like misclicks and instead clicks like one of the wood logs in his house. And then his whole house burns down. And I was like, oh, I want to play a game where that could happen.
Oh my God.
I like went home and downloaded the game that night. Like I was like, oh. And he's just like this very like nerdy British man. He's like, oh no, oh, oh, oh. And he just sort of like flees the house and you just watch it like burn down. And it's so funny. But it was also so revolutionary where it was like, what, your house can burn down? Like that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays it's pretty standard, I guess. But like at the time, it was that kind of stuff where you're just like, we were seeing games kind of like go up to a new level that hadn't really been done before.
So what would you say differs about your content now?
It's more polished now, right? Like it's more competitive. It's become a career. It's become a like expectation. There's a whole new generation, several new generations of creators who have come in watching the original creators who are like improving upon the format, the style, attention spans are different. Formats are different. There's been periods where people want to watch hour long videos on their TV or they want to watch, you know, vertical, funny, really engaging short things. So it's thinking about it a lot more versus like in the old school days, it was very much like just kind of participating in the experience. It was like watching your friend play a video game from the couch. Mm-hmm. And now it's more polished, I would say.
So what year did you go full time? When did you decide? Were you making YouTube videos with a job, doing both at the same time and then transitioned into being a full-time creator?
I was, yes. Actually, I don't know that I made the decision. It happened to me is what happened.
That happened to me as well, right. Actually.
I think that's a very like common thing. I had a corporate job. I was working for one of the largest Minecraft servers in the world. I was designing all of their content. We were doing a bunch of really cool stuff. You know, and this was like, at the time, the Minecraft servers were getting like us and Hypixel, the one that still exists, we were doing like 30 to 40,000 concurrent players on our server at one time, which would be like if we were standalone games, we'd be in the top 10 on Steam, right? We were doing like crazy numbers and it was all built inside of Minecraft. But then, you know, things changed, stuff slowed down, whatever. And a really good buddy of mine, Jerome ASF, who's a big Minecraft YouTuber, he came to me and was like, hey, you should come work for me. It was like a lower salary position, but it was going to be to help him create content for his content and also get sort of like some exposure, but like in a legitimate way, like, you know, not like in the classic like influencer thing, but in a like, hey, I'm a really big successful creator, you should join this and we'll help, like I'll help you grow your channel, like I'll teach you all the secrets, I'll do whatever. And I really wanted to do it, but it was a pretty big pay cut, and I was like, I don't know, I was like, let me think about it. The next morning I got fired. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we're doing this.
A sign from the universe.
Literally. It was literally like he said that to me. I was sick. He said that to me at like 6 or 7 p.m. I like popped some NyQuil. I went to bed. Was like, well, I don't know what to do. Next morning, 8 a.m., they were like, we're downsizing the company. You don't work here anymore. I was like, All right. Well, whoa. I guess we're doing content.
That was like a lightning strike from Zeus.
It was really like I got shoved through a door. They were like, I was like, ooh, you're hesitating? No. You're going this way. And I was like, all right, fair enough.
I mean, and it worked out.
Yeah, no regrets. But it was pretty funny where I was like, all right,
I guess.
Yeah, like they were like, you know, unfortunately, like the way the direction's coming to go, we got to downsize, you know, whatever. Oh, no hard feelings there. But it was just the like, mm-hmm. I kind of like laughed and they were like, huh? And I was like, mm-hmm. I have a job offer. So I guess I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy, crazy scenes.
Yeah. I mean, a wild origin story, but.
It was, and then it was a little while before it was like actually enough money to pay my bills.
Mm.
But it was a like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going for it. I had some savings. Mm-hmm. We figured it out. But it was, yep, that was the moment that it was like, all right, we're doing it.
Shit. I mean, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
You do. Yeah. Sometimes that be, you got to take a little leap. And, mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to be shoved into my leap. So I didn't even feel like an idiot for like quitting, like what was a pretty good job
right.
at the time to like, I felt irresponsible doing mm-hmm. it. So having it, the decision made for me, assuaged a lot of my guilt.
Right. It took the pressure off,
yeah,
I imagine. So now you usually make content with a group of people, Biffle, Zed, Kate. Am I missing anyone?
There's some other people. There's a guy named Sundy. There's like, we still make content with Jerome. Like, there's a, mm-hmm. like a larger, more extended group, but those are definitely some of like the mm-hmm. everyday type people.
So if you guys were an adventuring party, since I know that you are a fantasy fan, what would you say that each of the people you make content with the closest, who would they be in the adventuring party?
I think that you want something really clever from this, but unfortunately every single person is a bard.
That's, I mean, a group of bards is pretty entertaining, I will say.
But that's, yeah, it's
fumbling, chaotic. I kind of love that, to be honest.
There are no skill sets. We're all just vaguely entertaining. That's it, period.
It's kind of fun. I would watch that as an animated series, I will say.
I have always wanted to do, for content, and it never like lined up, but I always wanted to do a Baldur's Gate playthrough with four people where we were all bards. And it was just a traveling band that gets sucked into the Baldur's Gate story.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that would be the funniest thing.
Yeah.
But never done it. But also it would be a little probably too real. It would probably hurt me a little bit.
Too close to home.
Yeah. It would be much like managing a group of YouTubers. Yeah.
I mean, but that's most reality television, I feel.
It's just a bunch of bards?
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's a bunch of people who have strong personalities that are clashing.
Yeah, but it's also like bards that are usually not very well spec'd as well.
Right.
They've been chosen for a situation that they are not suited for because mm-hmm. the whole point is you want them to flounder and then get upset and then they can make you look bad.
Right. So if there was a YouTube Big Brother of some kind, would you participate?
No.
No?
No. No.
I feel like I don't know if knowing you, we've been friends for a long time. Years.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would be the villain in that situation or if you would be.
Here's what I think would happen is
I would get the nice edit, you know?
Oh, I think I would become the villain.
You do?
Because I think that I would set out to be very reasonable.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I can't stand a certain vibe that occurs with a lot of like influencer culture. And at a certain point, I would just give up. And when I give up, I get very blunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be very easy to edit me as the villain in that regard. I might not be wrong.
Fair.
I'd be the villain that you're like, yeah, I mean, he's got a point.
I mean, he's got a point.
But he would be the villain.
Right.
I'd be like, you're all idiots. Don't go left. I can't do this anymore.
The logical villain,
yes, yep.
If you will. That's fair. So for a while, you were making a lot of Among Us videos.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, man.
Do you think that Among Us made you a better liar in real life?
Maybe. I think that maybe I was a better liar already, and that's why I was good at making Among Us videos.
Because
a good lie is just a good story. It's about setting the scene, making the characters believable,
mm-hmm.
and blaming your idiot friends.
Mm-hmm. And an author has that skill set now, doesn't he?
Maybe. Is this a red flag? Have I just like given myself a red flag? Yeah, I'm actually great at lying.
Anything
you did with your eyes, though.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm reading my notes.
Yeah, it's crazy. You need notes about somebody you've been friends with for like 6 years, but it's fine.
You do a lot of stuff, and I also just have notes. This is my comfort thing with my hands.
Oh, it's just for a little ASMR.
Yeah, it's for my ADHD. I do just.
You have that?
No, I don't. Do you think I do?
No, I don't think it.
I know it. Anyway.
I didn't say anything.
And neither did I. Let's move on, shall we? Do you enjoy social deduction games like Among Us, like Werewolf, like Blood on the Clock Tower?
Yeah, but I think that after doing them for a living, like my relationship with them is different. Like they're fun, but I think that I play them about twice and then I'm like, all right, I'm good for the day. Mm. Like it's not like I want to play a billion. You know, when Among Us first came out, we were playing it all the time. It was pandemic. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It's a great game. But I have put more hours in that game than you'd believe. And so I think after a couple rounds, I'm like, I'm good.
I'm done. It's run its course.
Yeah.
How many did you play on Steam?
Yeah.
How many Steam hours do you have in Among Us? Do you know?
Actually, you know what? Because we did a lot of modded stuff. A lot of the modded stuff isn't on Steam.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
I would, if it was 1,000 hours, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. That's crazy, but yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
If content is involved.
Actually, if it was more than 1,000 hours, I wouldn't be surprised.
That is a crazy amount of time to play one game over and
over
again.
I mean, we did like multiple videos of it a week for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot.
In those types of games, do you prefer to be the bad guy or do you prefer to find out who the bad guy is?
I think that I really do like the ones like The Town of Us or Blood on the Clock Tower where there's like multiple agendas. Going on, like my favorite thing to do in Among Us is be the jester in Town of Us, where you want to get voted out.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the thing that I'm the best at, and that I love doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I like when there's more nuance. The very like straightforward, like one of us is an imposter. That's a little too easy, I think now.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like being the third role, like the chaos, right? Where like I'm winning,
role.
But I'm like on my own little side thing that's like different. I like those ones a lot.
Yeah. I think that fits well with your brand. You have
I that don't know what you mean, Danielle.
you give off an air of potentially guilty, I think, no matter what. And I think that resonates with those games as well. You know that your friends are like, it might be Andrew. And you're like, ah.
It's like, yeah, it's true. I get blamed a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, but there's also like a little bit of weaponized competence in there too. Where like if the killer's doing good, people will be like, Andrew's a good liar. And it's like, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not.
Punished for being good at your job.
At my non-red flag.
Right.
You got real quiet at that. Yeah.
Not a red flag at all to be good at those games. I will say, at the end of those games, I'm competitive. So I will want to win until I've won. And then I look around the room, like Blood on the Clock Tower or Werewolf or something, and see everybody's faces and know that I lied to all of them. And I frequently ask myself if it was worth it afterward.
I did recently play Blood on the Clock Tower for the first time.
Mm.
And I played it in a group of people who are not content creators.
Oh.
And I did look several of my dear friends in the eye and call them a liar when they were telling the truth. And some of them were a little rattled at the end. And I was a little like, ooh.
Yeah. When Among Us was really popular during COVID, and I also played it a lot, not
Didn't
for
we
content.
Play together a couple times?
Oh, yeah, we
yeah,
did.
Yeah, I
we
think
did.
We did, yeah.
915 hours
on Steam. So I have 900 on Steam. And I want to say that that's maybe half.
The non-modded
yeah.
Among Us.
So
wow.
Like I said, if it was more than, like if it's 2,000 hours, I would not be shocked.
That is a lot of Among Us content.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is
I was very burnt out on it in the end.
Yeah, yeah. I bet. But when I was playing a lot of Among Us, I love social deduction games and games in general. But I quickly realized that there were two categories of gamers. And one of them are very casual and very nice and very chill. And one of them are very logical and serious and competitive. And those two types of people playing Among Us do not mix.
I think we had a group that did that where we brought,
I think so.
It was like a bunch of like former esport pros and cosplayer streamers. And we put them into a blender.
I think
and
so.
Like several people cried. Yes. And I was like, oops.
Yeah. I got a message afterward being like, this person made me cry during the
Waller,
delegation
Waller
part.
Made people cry.
Yes. And I was like, it's not
you,
that serious, but I also grew up in like the gamer Halo Xbox Live
oh,
household.
Yeah, yeah.
So nothing will faze me when it comes to games.
You've lost your soul.
Like
bit.
I will just shake hands at the end, no matter what. Haymakers were thrown during the deliberations.
I remember I organized that group more or less, right? Like some people were friends of friends, but it was a, like I sort of finessed it. And then we had like people I didn't really know crying as my like super sweaty friends were like leaning into it. And I was like, I felt so bad. And I was live and was like, look at me smiling. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's really rough when you're live and you're trying to navigate that kind of situation. I was never live, thank God.
I forgot about that.
But I'm also sweaty and I love a sweaty game. Like I love when everyone's sweaty and everyone gets really into it. And I...
Well, that's the only time those games are fun.
That's what I think too.
If somebody is sensitive to it, it's not fun. Because
right.
then you can't play the game like correctly.
Yeah.
Which is like a soulless thing to say, but like
but
it's true.
I unfortunately agree with you. So
the game's about lying.
It's rough. Especially when it's like a 10-person lobby, you're trying to like rally as many people as you can. So you'll take anyone who's willing to play, and then you are like, oh wait, we don't do this the same way, actually.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, the intention is never to hurt anybody's feelings.
Nope. But when somebody's feelings do get hurt, you're like, shoot.
Right. That was a lesson, I think.
There were many lessons.
I had to learn. We all had to learn with the Among Us
trend. Thanks to 2021, we all know which of our friends we'd invite to an Among Us game and which ones we wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. And who's a really good liar and who's not.
Which is not a red flag.
In case you forgot. So are you somebody who enjoys the more social games in general, since you do usually record with a group doing Minecraft or Among Us? Or do you prefer single player games?
Oh, I don't play very many single player games. I, in my free time, I play like sweaty ranked games.
Oh.
Like the only games I enjoy are where people, when I win, somebody loses.
Uh-huh.
Why did you?
Waving the red flag again.
What? In a good natured.
Sure.
Oh no, this is turning into therapy.
Absolutely,
I don't like this.
Absolutely.
I play a lot of. So before I was an internet funny man, I tried to go pro in a couple esports. I played Halo and I played Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. I would go to like MLG events around the country. And I'm still friends with a bunch of the guys that I like played amateur with. And so like once or twice a week, we have like standing Halo nights. We go play like Halo ranked or whatever. We still keep up, even though it's been like a really long time since we were doing that. Like one of the guys has like a kid and he's like, all right. Kids in bed, we can play Halo. You know, it's like full on dad gaming, but that's like what I do for fun off camera. I like the social aspect for content because like people are funny. Like it's not even really about the games, right? Like when you're in a content group, it's almost more like you're cast members of a sitcom and people are coming in for their daily episode where like nothing really happens. Like, you know, just like in a sitcom, like something happens, but like then you go back to zero. Like you can watch the episodes out of order. You can, and so it's about like assembling a group of people that you have fun with doing whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I've never thought about it that way before, where you guys are characters of a sitcom. What differences do you think that sitcom Andrew is than regular Andrew? or what differences do you have when you're recording? I'll say.
I think he's just like, he's like louder. He's a little more like, he's just me like to 10, mm-hmm. right? Because you're like being engaging for the camera. You're keeping the energy. You're doing whatever. Like, I think I'm a little more laid back than I appear on camera most times. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think it's fairly consistent. Like, mm-hmm. I'm definitely the one who gets like mad, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm the yelly one, which I don't know that I'm necessarily that way as, but like, I also do that for fun in real life too. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
it's a good bit. I love a good bit.
I just try to be like Chandler Bing, really. that's really it.
Yeah. I think you're pulling it off. I'll say.
It's also unfortunately accidental. So,
oh, good.
People would nickname me Chandler before I ever saw an episode of the show. Mm. And then some people sat me down to watch it, and I watched it, and I was like, oh no, he's saying the little thoughts.
He's the inside thoughts.
Yeah, no, yeah, that that hurt me a little bit.
If you are looking for somebody to emulate, not a bad role.
It could
model,
be worse. I'll green say. Flag.
Yeah, green flag. There's a green flag. We'll keep up with that as we continue. So then, do you think that playing, I mean, we kind of covered this already, but do you think that playing community games with people, whether it's on camera or not, makes you learn a little bit more about them? Like whether or not they are sweaty gamers or not gamers, but maybe about their personality as well. Like if your personality is ranked up to a 10, let's say, when you're recording, would you say the same for other people that you've played games with?
I'd say most YouTubers are cranked up, right? Because we have to do like sprints in the sense that like, you're maybe recording for 45 minutes to an hour maximum, mm-hmm. for like a video versus like streamers. You know, if you're like an 8-hour grinder, you can't maintain that like, yeah, guys, that's so sick the whole time or you'll die.
Yeah.
So I think that most YouTubers definitely are like, if you hear us before we are like counting down, it's like everybody flips a little switch and like leans forward in their gamer chair a little bit.
Like the Ash Ketchum hat backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
I can go from like asleep to like, what's up, guys, in like 10 seconds. So it's just, mm-hmm. it's a skill set. Mm-hmm. You definitely do learn about people, but also, I don't know, playing games for content is different than playing games with your friends too, because the goal is different. When you play with your friends, your goal is to like succeed, win, whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you play with content creators, your goal is to make a good video, mm-hmm. which sometimes means succeeding later or succeeding slower, faster, whatever, mm-hmm. skipping something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You think about it differently in those situations, I think.
Right. I enjoy, what I'll say is that I underestimated how hard it was to record games for YouTube content. I have streamed, which, like you said, is different because you can't keep up this like high energy persona for a really long time. And I would do like 4-ish hour streams.
Those are long.
And it was too long to be that excited. I learned that very quickly. But me and Kate recorded a couple of videos together because we were approached by the same game.
Oh, nice.
And we're recording it for YouTube and we were like, we should just do it together. And Kate is good at doing this because it's their job, but
Kate's been in the trenches. So yeah.
And I was not trained the same way, I'll say. Like I wasn't, and I'm sweaty is right. Also what I'll say. So
you go real quiet and lock in.
I do, exactly. I wanna loot things. I wanna find everything. I wanna get the best gun. I wanna make sure I didn't miss anything. I'm like I play games a very particular way, which is fun for stream. Because if you're a completionist and you're watching somebody play, you want them to not miss anything because you wanna experience the game. But when you're recording gameplay for YouTube, me and Kate were doing different things the whole time. Kate was doing bits and messing things up on purpose and blowing me up. And I was like locked in trying to do the fight the best way I could possibly do the fight. And afterward, I was like, maybe I'm not built for this. This isn't my type of content. So I don't think people know how hard it can be.
No, it's just playing video games. How hard could it be?
Right. Right. Of course.
Well, it's also really hard to be like multidiscipline, right? So like every streamer has that problem and vice versa. When I was trying to stream, I don't know how to not be like this the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I would crash so hard. Like hour three, I'd be like, and also a lot of people would come around from like other streamers who were like, yeah, we're hanging out. And they'd be like, this guy's really disingenuous because he's like, but for me, I'd be like, oh, I can't spend in YouTube videos. The reason YouTubers don't read anything is because that's when people leave your videos, right? So like, I don't want to read anything on stream. Like I would be like, I don't care. I can feel people leaving. It's not funny. I haven't told a joke. Yeah. So a couple of my streamer friends who would record with me or stream with like me and Biffle and some people would be like, dude, you got to chill. It's like, I don't know how to do that. Like all of my training for the last 5 years as a YouTuber has been like, never slow down, never surrender. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, just like hang out, dude. And I'm like, I don't actually know how to do that.
Uh-huh. Have you learned that now or do you just stream less?
I just don't stream.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I ended up not liking streaming as much. I think, ooh, you want some spicy takes?
Sure. Hit me with a spicy take.
I think that becoming a successful streamer is like the worst option of all of them career-wise.
Really?
Yeah.
Below cosplayer?
Yeah. Well, okay. So let me actually...
Wait, really?
I'll say that the reason for this...
Okay, yeah.
...is because, unfortunately, if you become a successful streamer, you really, like your number one income source is being live, which is an incredible lack of freedom, and like detriment to work-life balance which sucks for like a long-term sustained career.
Sure.
There was a thing when like Ninja was at his peak where one night he accidentally went live while he was like working on stuff, right? And this dude's crushing it, right? He's making gobs of money, he's doing great, and he didn't know he was live, and he was just sitting at his computer and he just looked exhausted, right? Just like bone weary. And like obviously dude has made his money, he's done great, like I'm not knocking streamers at all, but he and a bunch of other streamers started talking about the thing. They were like, they weren't going to events anymore, they weren't doing anything because it was like, oh, I lose so much money if I don't go. Like I remember he and Tfue won like the first Fortnite like pro-am tournament thing. And then they stopped going. And somebody asked him, and there was a clip where he was like, even if I win the tournament, I will actually lose money by attending. And it's just like, if you become a super successful streamer, you are not making money if you're not live. Like, obviously, you make a little bit, like, you know, like your main thing. As a YouTuber, I have a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But I can get ahead on videos and take a vacation. I can, right? People are watching my videos right now. Awesome. I have a lot more freedom. And so I started to realize as I like my stream grew that the way that it becomes better is by streaming more. And I didn't want to give up the time.
Yeah.
I value like some flexibility, going to events, doing cool things, living. And so
having
that's when
social life,
yeah,
doing things,
being healthy, you know. Yeah, yeah. So that's when I stopped really like streaming. Well, between that and like, during the pandemic, my YouTube was when my YouTube channel really took off, and it went for like doing okay to like, we were running a small business, right? I had an editor, I had a graphic designer, like we had a team. And then my stream was like barely paying my rent. And it was like, I'm paying like multiple people's salaries from a YouTube channel. And I'm barely paying my rent from a Twitch channel, and I'm putting about the same amount of hours into them each day. Why am I doing one of these?
And one is a lot more lucrative than the other.
When I can put that time, like some of that extra time back into my YouTube channel, continue to like take care of it, and then, I don't know, live.
I agree. When I was doing Twitch a lot back in the day, I went to TwitchCon or a con of some kind. And when I came back, I had lost a third of my subscribers just from being gone for one weekend, which was one stream. Which is a third of your income, essentially, because that was before bits and everything. But yeah, it's scary. It puts a scary pressure on you to always, to never get sick, to always be around, to always be available. It's true. It's really rough.
I am always a few days ahead on videos, more or less. So like, yeah, if I get sick, cool. You know, like if I'm sick for too long, we run into a problem. But like, yeah, I could take a day off tomorrow and be fine. Mm-hmm. I have a lot more stability in that. Other YouTubers are better about making content that is like more evergreen than me. Like my videos really, they get most of their views when they come out. People are like, today's episode, awesome, I'm in. Mm-hmm. And then the video is more or less done. Right. Other people are great at making those videos that are like, this has been getting views for a year and a half. That's a whole nother beast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're just like on a what's the little wheel the rodents run on?
Like mouse wheel?
Hamster wheel. There it is. Yeah, yeah. You're on a little hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. And if you fall off, it sucks. And yeah. I was like, I don't actually want to do that.
Yeah, that's a great point, I think. It doesn't even feel like a spicy take, to be honest. It's actually pretty real life.
But even cosplay is like, you're ahead, right? Like in theory, well.
In theory, I am ahead.
It's possible for you to be ahead if you just didn't have so much ADHD.
For me to be ahead. I'm in a bit of a rut right now. We're not going to talk about it.
Really? Let's unpack that.
What? No, let's not. Let's keep it moving. Okay, look, what I love to do on this show is ask people for tips. Started out as cosplay tips. Now, since we're doing more content creators in general, tips in general. So if someone wanted to start a gaming YouTube channel in 2026, I'm sure you get asked this question a lot. What?
I'm restraining myself from just saying, don't do it.
But. Right. What is your best... What are your three best tips?
Don't do it. No. I think the tip I hear the least that I believe fundamentally is sort of tied to like what I was talking about with Twitch, where like you get on the hamster wheel and it can suck. Mm-hmm. And that's true also for the type of content that you make. Everybody always talks about like, you got to find your niche. You got to find your thing. You got to, you know, experiment and then find it and like lock in and do. And like, that's all true. Like there's a whole like system to understanding what is good content, what people want to watch. And you do have to bend what you make to people's expectations and interests in order to make a living doing it. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't make videos for me. I make videos for other people. I enjoy doing that. That mindset has kept me from burning out a lot faster than a lot of my peers, because a lot of people start from, I made a video I really like, and that's awesome. But if you're doing it for you and your interest and your audience interests begin to like diverge, you will hate it. You will be miserable. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of creators who have stopped because of that. So my advice would be, do all those things about getting good at making content, figuring out what works, what people like, study, but also make content that you like. And figure out what you like making and do that within there. Because if you blow up off of something you don't like doing, you will be miserable.
Mm-hmm. Pigeonholed into doing that.
Pigeonholed into doing it forever. And you won't be able to talk yourself out of it, because the money can be great. Like if you have like crazy momentum and you hate it, you will be your own boss paying yourself to do something that you hate. And it will only last so long, and you will hate your life. Mm-hmm. So that's like my absolute, like most foundational piece of advice for content creation is like, it's super fun. But as you know, too, the hours are insane. Like this is not a 9-to-5 gig. This is not haha, tee hee fun all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work, but I love it. Mm-hmm. And that keeps me sane. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Was that only one?
It was only one, but it covered a lot of ground. I think it's an acceptable answer.
You talked too long and this show has a limit.
No. The other thing that I'll ask is more logistical. How long are your videos and how often do you upload?
I upload every day. That varies a little bit because... Again, part of it is tailoring to people's viewing expectations. So for example, here's a real life example. I said example twice. During the pandemic, people completely changed how they watched YouTube. Mm. So pre-pandemic and for the last like few years, the majority of YouTube watchers were watching on their phone, right? People on the bus, people traveling, people out and about, pop up in a YouTube video. Great. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, people were stationary. They weren't moving, so they started watching differently. And everybody now has a smart TV.
Right.
So during the pandemic, watching YouTube on your TV surged like an insane amount. And, you can actually see this. Like as a YouTuber, I can go and look at what devices people watch my videos on.
Gotcha.
Literally exploded. But it fundamentally changed how people thought about YouTube. The other thing that happened that was really, really interesting was gaming became much more accepted. I got so many emails from parents during the pandemic that were essentially something like, I never understood why my kid would want to watch a video game instead of playing a video game. Mm. But now that they're here, it's on the TV and I'm working in the kitchen and I hear it and I get it. And so now we watch your video together or like whatever. It was really cool, but it was like a barrier breakdown. So like it became more acceptable. It became more whatever. But so suddenly TVs are the opposite of phones, right? Phones are like you have every single option in front of you. You got a text, you got anything, you're swiping out. So those like famous YouTube videos that are all like jump cut and like nit, 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 those were designed to keep you on your phone from looking away because it was so easy to do so.
Yeah.
On a TV, you actually don't really want to be looking. You want to find something cool and you want to put it on and you're probably doing something else. And you don't want to be like constantly hopping around because it's a remote instead of like whatever. So during that period, the average length of gaming videos like doubled because it used to be like a 15-minute video. One of the things YouTube cares about is, well, they care about two things. They care about how much of the video they watch.
Like both
like,
rate.
Like, well, both like the, like just, yeah, the retention rate in terms of percentage of what the video is. So like 10 minutes of a 20-minute video is different than 10 minutes of a 30-minute video.
Okay.
But they also care about how many minutes you're consuming when you're watching it. So 15 minutes of a 30-minute video is better than 10 minutes of a 20-minute video.
Okay.
Right? It's not just that it's 50%. It's like the amount of that as well. Sure. So if people are suddenly not switching away from videos as long, longer videos were getting pushed really hard because they had these like crazy retention times from TVs and they could run a lot more ads. So people were making a lot more money off of them. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of dying back down now that we're like back out and about. People are moving, like phones have surged back up some. YouTube's also changing like how they want to be perceived on TVs. There's a whole thing about that. So the answer is I have published videos that are 3 hours before. Right about now, I'm doing a lot of like 30 minutes.
Gotcha.
That was a really long answer. I'm going to give you shorter answers from now.
Don't worry. The long answers are fine. That's kind of about learning and
you've activated my special interest
teaching. Yeah. Well, I also like when I do panels at cons about teaching aspects of cosplay, I get very into it as well. And that's kind of the point of this. So,
okay. All right, cool. Then I'm on brand.
You're among good company.
I thought I was going to be in trouble after.
No. However, I do have something for you here.
For me?
By for you, I mean to show you. And you already saw it because we came here together. But this is Andrew's book,
oh, man.
Soul Fraud. I believe this is the original.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that anymore. You can't get that anymore.
Yeah, I have a relic with me today.
You do. That is OG.
I wanted to read these quotes off the back. I'm also going to ask you for a synopsis as well, but I'm proud of you by mom. I didn't even know you could read, says granddad, and neat, says some girl at a party.
Those are all real.
Those are all real quotes.
Those are all real quotes.
Real quotes on Soul Fraud, book one of the Debt Collection by Andrew Givler. I brought this for you to sign.
Oh, okay. Did you bring me a pen?
I did.
Wow. All right.
Where did I put it? Here we go.
Ooh, fancy.
I know.
I'm doing this live.
Sign my Soul Fraud, my relic.
I know. Yeah. This is out of print now.
You have new cover art.
We do. Yes.
Who's the artist?
It's a guy named Chris McGrath, who does a lot of traditionally published books. Mm-hmm. He one of the things he's known the most for is he does the Dresden Files, which are like some of the most popular urban fantasy series. Mm-hmm. He's also doing like the special editions of Dune. He's done a bunch of Halo stuff. He's just like a legend.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I sent him an email and I was like, hey man, I'm making some books. And he was like, sweet, let's do it.
Sure.
It was the most, it's just like out of body experience. Like he's like, let's have a phone call and chat.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone call was like, he's like, well, I'm doing the Dune special edition cover. And then I got to do a Dresden Files. And then I'm doing something for Halo. But I think I could squeeze you in between Dresden and Halo. And I was like, man, one of these things is not like the other.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, I was like, whatever you want, man.
Walking among giants.
Yeah,
right
no,
now.
It's really, he's just a legend. Wow. This is a very fat
good,
marker.
Good,
so
good, good.
That is legally my signature.
Fantastic. I won't copy it and
good
steal
luck,
your identity.
Honestly, good luck. If you can steal it, you can have it.
Well, I called this a fantasy series in the intro. Is it more specific than that? What would you
categorize it would be
it
urban
as?
Fantasy.
Urban fantasy.
Which is sort of like a subset of fantasy where there is magic in our world. Supernatural, the TV show, is urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. Vampire Diaries, urban mm-hmm. fantasy.
Okay.
You know, it's just essentially where like the myths and legends are real to some degree and they exist in our world, usually like without normal people knowing, but that's like a trope. Like there's variations of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Soulfraud takes place in Los Angeles for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set in our world. They have cell phones, that kind of thing. So it's considered like urban fantasy in that regard.
Gotcha. And it's five books.
The fifth book is coming out next month, but there will be a couple more.
Oh,
I know, I'm not done.
Interesting. Okay. Hot tea.
More to go.
I love these books. I've listened to them all on Audible.
Have you?
I have.
I didn't know you made it all the way through Death Tax.
I did.
Oh.
I did. I listened to it on the airplane at the last.
That's
con
true. You,
I went
you,
to.
I've been, you've texted me from many an airplane, being like, "Oh my God."
Yeah. Well, the last time I texted you about it, it was because there was a girl. There was an unfavorable person, and I was like, "Who hurt you?" I think was
yeah,
my
that's
text.
Right, that's right. That's
I was
right.
Like, "Which girl hurt you?"
How much time do you have?
But a synopsis, I guess, right, is there was let me see if I can do my
I'm
best
I'm excited
with
for this.
Okay.
Pitch me my book. Go ahead.
All right. Sure. So main character gets approached by a demon. Demon says, hey, would you like to make a deal? Your life kind of blows. I could make it really good. You just have to sign away your soul. And the guy, main character, is like, I think that that's probably a really bad idea. I've seen this play out before. Let's not. And the demon, Dan, right?
Dan the demon.
Forges his signature and does it anyway. And then the main character, Matt, goes on many an adventure trying to get out of his contract that he shouldn't have been in the first place.
That's pretty good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it?
I think you write the books now.
I'll co-write the next one. So how did being an author come about? How did you get this idea? What made you want to do all of this?
I always say that I became a YouTuber on accident because my whole childhood, I wanted to be an author.
Okay.
That was my like first artistic dream. The one that when I was like, you'll never make it. You know, like,
sure.
like every artistic kid has a dream that somebody tells them like, well, it's going to be real hard and most people don't ever do it. For me, it was like, I loved books since I was a kid. I always wanted to be an author. And then YouTube sort of just happened.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing Soulfraud before I moved to LA. Before I was doing YouTube more as a like, this is pretty cool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of got distracted by YouTube becoming like a real thing.
Sure.
And so it was like 5 years later after I moved to LA that during the pandemic where I was like, oh, I should finish that book. And so I sat down and I finished it. As for the idea, I actually got the idea because I was working a corporate sales job. And one day they brought us all in because somebody did that. Like it was like, you know, major contracts with like, you know, huge tech kind of stuff. And so some sales guy just like renewed a contract and was like, they won't notice. And they did. And so they were like, hey, don't do that. And I'm sitting there like, wait, that's a great idea for a fantasy story. And like, that's where it came from.
That's so cool. It's not cool for
it's
that
not cool.
Business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy that it was based off of real life.
A real thing happened. And I was like, oh, that's wild. And
wow.
Then I was like, I'm like sitting in there where they're all giving us this like very serious talking to. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a demon. And then like he just forges it. And then like yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, wait, I need to write this down.
Yeah,
hurry
much,
up.
Yeah. I got to go.
We got to wrap this up, guys. So you started writing it a while ago and you picked it up now and you're continuing to write it. My question is, I know a lot of people write the ending before the beginning. Do you know how your book is going to end, or are you going with God?
So in writing, there's a scale that authors talk about, and it's called pantser versus plotter. Mm. And a plotter is like a guy I know, Christopher Rocchio, who writes the Sun Eater series, which is brilliant. He once told me that he writes 80,000 word outlines that he essentially just fills in to create the book. A pantser sits down and is like, chapter one. I'm more of a pantser. I have an idea. And I, like, for example, with the debt collection, I know how it's going to end. Okay. I have written the final page. But if I change my mind and I like something better, I'll throw it away. Sure. So I usually have a direction I think it's going. And then when I get to a fork in the road, that can sort of inform the decisions around me about, like, okay, cool, this will kind of make it where I can, like, I can see the path to how I get there. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I'm like, but this is funnier or cooler or what, you know, like whatever the situation calls for. And so I will just go, all right, I guess we're going left. And then we find out. And every single book I've ever written, there is a, like, usually like 60% to 70%. I hate it. I'm like, this is a disjointed mess, and it makes no sense, and it was written by an idiot, and I don't know.
That's all creatives, by the way, in every field.
And I don't know how I'm going to get there. Mm-hmm. And then that part takes the longest of the whole book, and then it'll be like, click, 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 and I'll be like, oh, I love it, mm-hmm. And then we finish it.
To apply that to cosplay, that's when we paint. That's when everything
starts, it just looks like lumpy,
and then you
paint it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you are also writing a brand new series called Ironbound.
Yep.
What is the biggest difference, would you say, between the two?
Ironbound is a more traditional, like, high fantasy novel. It's also called progression fantasy, mm-hmm. which is like, progression fantasy is sort of borrowing from a lot of the, like, anime leveling up trope kind of thing, where, like, a big aspect of the magic system is acquiring power, and the character's journey of acquiring power. So, like, solo leveling, progression fantasy, right?
Okay.
Something like that. But then it's put into, like, often a Western fantasy story. Mm-hmm. So Ironbound is a Roman Empire inspired progression fantasy that still has that sort of, like, leveling aspect to it, while then dealing with, like, a Roman Empire like fantasy world. So when that thing on TikTok was going on, like, a year ago, where everyone was like, did you know men think about the Roman Empire every day?
Yeah.
One of my friends texted me and she was like,
that is the first thing I thought, by the way.
Oh yeah. No, one of my friends texted me and she was like, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And I was like, writing Ironbound. And I was like,
unfortunately, constantly? Like, unfortunately, all the time.
And she was like, I don't believe you. And then she read Ironbound and she was like, oh. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, correct. I do think about the Roman Empire every day.
All the time. Uh-huh. Well, I know a little bit about Ironbound. I also have it on Audible. I haven't finished. I told you that earlier. The part that stood out to me was the attunement symbols. So in that universe, when somebody attunes to a certain job, the symbol that they get is for that job. Is that sort of?
Yeah, kind of. It's sort of like an affinity for an element, but the element can be really abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, there's earth, air, fire, water, but there's also light or sound or rock, or, like, it could be more specific, or more abstract.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, kind of.
Is that branded on them?
No. What happens is, in this world, magic is, like, limited. So there is a metal that falls from the sky that's sort of a, like, quicksilvery kind of thing. And people are chosen to get it put into their body. And when you do, it's sort of like a parasite that binds with you that gives you sort of access to magical abilities. And it run like it fuses with your skin. So people actually have like veins of metal running like up and down their like body. But they don't have like a physical manifestation that like identifies them as like, oh, this person is fire and this person is earth. Like it's the color of the metal tells you like how strong they are.
Gotcha. I was hoping that it was a brand on their actual skin because it was really making me think of My Little Pony and how they have cutie marks on their butts. And if you were a party pony, then you get balloons. And as I was reading, actually, I was watching Paul Todkill, who's a mutual friend of ours, review of it, and he was summarizing it. And I was like, this really sounds like My Little Pony. Does Andrew a My Little Pony fan? And I really had to ask you if you got the idea from My Little Pony.
That's crazy. What a crazy ambush that was. Oh my gosh.
Has anybody told you that before?
No, it hasn't come up. You know why? Because most people finish reading the book before they ask the question.
That's fair.
He's like My Little Pony. Most people just say Avatar, which like,
oh, that's
also not
too.
Really, but like, sure, at least get why they're saying that. But My Little Pony's crazy. I'm a party pony symbol.
I'm a party pony.
Oh no.
My symbol's balloons. Anyway.
Thank you for absolutely ruining any integrity of my very serious fantasy novel.
You in on your secondary YouTube channel, Give Reads. Give
Yes.
At Give Reads, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You were you do these recap videos every year of everything you're going to do for the year. And you said that your favorite book you had ever written was Death Tax in that video. Has it changed in the past year?
A little. I think it's funny. I actually answered this question recently. But I, so far, I think that every book I write is my favorite book when I'm done with it,
gotcha.
Which is kind of nice. Like I think I'm also early enough in my career where every book I learn a little bit, like maybe eventually I'll plateau. I hope not. But like, you know, I always do something a little bit better every time.
Mm-hmm.
Of the books that are published, I think that Death Tax and Ironbound are my two favorites for sure. But there's a book, I'm done with a book in both of those series, which I think are maybe better. So of the ones people can read, Death Tax is a favorite and always will be. But Sleep Debt, which is book 5, I like a lot. And Cold Wind, which is book 2 of Ironbound, I also like a lot. So we'll see.
We'll see. Are we getting a release date soon for the second Ironbound book?
Yes, it's May 5th.
May 5th. Exciting.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that.
And they're bigger, I know, as well, and more expansive. The universe is
a lot bigger,
larger.
Cold Wind is the biggest book I ever wrote, which is longer than Ironbound, which is the biggest book I ever wrote. But it's like, for reference, Death Tax, which is like is about 130,000 words, maybe 140. Ironbound is 175,000 words,
mm-hmm.
and Cold Wind is over 200,000 words. Was a lot.
That is a lot.
It's going to be like 600 pages, 650 pages, something like
wow.
that. I don't know. I will see how Ironbound, they already had to make it really small to fit. So I'm really curious to see what they're going to do. Sorry, guys.
Hey, I mean, push the envelope. Why
I'm going
to
do it until they tell me no. So
yeah,
we'll find out.
Exactly. And is that a 2-book series or
gonna
is it going to be? Okay.
It's gonna currently going to be 4. Total. Yeah.
Gotcha.
We'll see.
Very exciting. Yeah, yeah. Do you write every day?
I try to. If I'm editing, sometimes I can't. Like I'll just like take a week off from writing and edit when I get a draft back or something.
Mm-hmm.
And also, unfortunately, I do have too many jobs. So some days I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, I would like to write every day.
Yeah.
When everything's going well, mm-hmm. I'm writing every day.
Is your goal still to write 1 million words per year? It's a pretty lofty goal, I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I could do it. Or I could get pretty close. If I wrote every single day, like when I'm doing good, I write about 3,000 words a day. And I can write that in about 2 to 2.5 hours. If I did that every single day, that would be about 900,000 words a year. It just doesn't. It's more of like a goal I can't quite catch. Yeah. So, but like, I don't think that I've really done more than like 400,000 words in a year, but that's still several books.
Yeah.
So I'm not disappointed, but I would like to, I'd like to hit like 700 or something. That'd be fun.
Sure, sure. That's the real goal.
Yeah, something. Yeah. The real goal is to get to a cadence with books, just like with my YouTube videos, where I'm not like always up against a deadline, where I'm a little bit ahead. We're in a good spot. I can like think about them longer, right? Mm-hmm. The further ahead I am, the more chances I get to look at them, the more chances I get to adjust things, right. Make them better. So I'm trying to like front load it to get ahead on my pipeline so that then I have more books ready. We can put more time into them. We can do them better. And I don't have to be panicking all the time.
Sure. We'll I think see. That's every content creator's goal ever.
Yeah, YouTubers are funny about that because you'd think they would be, but some of them are not.
Yeah.
And it's like, just get ahead. And they're like, I don't. They're superstitious about it.
Mm,
some YouTubers are worried.
Interesting.
I know YouTubers who have been worried about being ahead on videos because they're worried a trend will change. And so they're like, I don't want to do it because by the time the video comes out, what if it's not cool anymore? It's like,
sure.
Shut up, dude.
I guess. Well, what do you have coming up besides the new book release in May? Plug
anything.
Any project that is coming up for you soon?
Well, we're going to be doing another board game Kickstarter in the summer, I believe, which will be our third project once we fulfill the second one that we just finished. I'm supposed to hopefully get Ironbound 3 out before the end of the year, which means I need to finish it. Speaking of not being ahead of deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
So those are probably the two biggest things that I can think of. And then there's going to be hopefully like a little mini book tour, a bunch of conventions.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be at Dragon Con, World Con, Lit RPG Con. I'm forgetting a con. Dragonsteel.
Mm, the grind never sleeps.
What is sleep? I couldn't
tell
you.
What is sleep? Great question. Well, if people are trying to find you online, it would be at Sigils.
Yep. You'll find me on any platform with that.
Any platform. And then give reads as well.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's mostly really only active on TikTok is give reads. I do have a YouTube channel for it as well. But that's one of those things that I just don't have the time to do. Great. Maybe one day.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you making the trek all the way from
90
the
minutes.
West Side. I feel very solidified in our friendship now. Thank
We've
you for that.
We've been friends for 5 years. What do you mean?
But it's different. There's a very distinct sign that someone is like a ride or die friend, and that's picking you up from LAX. And I would say being in a 90-minute Uber to do a podcast. So thank you
Nothing
very
else
much.
That I've done apparently compares to this. Amazing.
Well,
red
with
flag.
That being said, I asked a couple of our mutual friends.
Oh, no.
What they had to say about you. And I would like to unpack the fact that every single one of them said that you have weak knees.
Oh, God.